podcast that you're about to hear comes from a program titled The RSL, A Time to Celebrate. These sessions have been facilitated by Christian Teusner from the Emu Tree in partnership with the Wakery RSL sub-branch. To explore further podcasts, visit thewaywewere.podbean.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening. I'm sitting here with Brenda Abbey. Brenda, thank you for agreeing to speak with me today. Could I ask you to state your full name and date of birth, please?
Yes, Brenda Mary Herlin Abbey. And I was born in London, went through the war just south of London, and have quite a number of experiences through that time.
And what was your date of birth?
18th of September, 1936.
Could we start with just maybe talking firstly about your childhood, and what kind of experiences do you think about or can you reflect on about those early days?
I can remember playing in the garden with my dog, who used to love the little sycamore things that would fly down, and she'd be jumping up and catching them, and it seemed always a very relaxing time. And then we had to move, and eventually, a little while after that move, was when I started school and the war had started, and some of my friends disappeared because they went off to mainly Herefordshire. My parents asked if I'd like to go, but I really didn't want to. I was an only child and I really wanted to stay with my parents. Unfortunately, my father, when I was only one, had a car fall on him when he was working on a car, and the jack broke. And it fell on his shoulders and broke his back. So he was in hospital for some time and therefore couldn't go to war. He was able to walk and do things afterwards, but it was with great difficulty. And my mum had to go back to work while he stayed and looked after me. And I think things came a bit more normal, that he did manage to get work. But I do remember a lot about those times.
Could you just tell me your parents, what were their names?
Wyn and Harry.
What can you tell me about your experiences and maybe some things you witnessed during the war in London?
Well, I can remember, I think it was May 41, when there was a big blitz in London and a lot of things were on fire, so they, not quite the Great Fire of London, which was a bit earlier. But yes, a great fire of London through there, and we walked from a railway station to somewhere else because there was no transport. We went to see my grandparents who lived the other side of the city, and I can remember walking along London Bridge, and we had to jump over the hoses that were into the Thames to get the water. And we went to, I think it was called the Elephant and Castle railway station, and there was a huge arched window, and the firemen were hosing it down, and it was all blackened and no glass or anything there. And those things still stick in my mind. I can even remember what I was wearing that day.
Really? What were you wearing that
day? My mum had made a skirt, and I had a little blouse or something, I think, a skirt with little straps, and she made a forage cap like the army guys wore. And it was all a pretty yellow. Funny how things stick in your head, isn't it?
That's great imagery.
It was such an enormous day. Wow. So another time, every day we'd walk down the road, and at the corner of the street, which wasn't a very long street, there was a house where a little old man would sit out the front on his steps, and we'd always say hello and he'd chat back to us. And then one day we went down and the house had all been bombed. No man, we have no idea what happened to him. So I think I'm going to cry. More friends over the road. They had a son who was in the Air Force. He was lost. They didn't know where he was, what happened. And I don't know if they ever found him or ever knew what happened. So a lot of things around me. Next door but one to us had a bomb drop in their back garden, but it didn't go off. It left a big crater, so they had to come. We had to move away while they defused it. Another time, the worst time, was when a bomb dropped the road back from us, and all the front of our house, all the glass was broken. It's shards of glass in the piano and tiles off the roof. a big truck came round and they took lifted up the carpets because it wasn't wall to wall, it was a carpet in the middle of the room, and they put all the bits and shook the carpets into this big truck. And I can remember that particularly well. My father, the day before that happened, had said, we're going to move the shelter that we had, which was more of a table. We're moving that into the other room, and the piano moved from here down to this part. And if we had been in that room, we would have got the shards of glass coming into the shelter. So, because he just had this thing, he'd got to do it now. And you get these feelings sometimes. So, yes, we were quite lucky on that.
Do you remember how you felt through these experiences? You know, being such a young age, is it
sometimes a bit scared, but mostly it was just sort of like everyday things, because you'd hear the sirens and you'd get in the shelter, and it was what was happening. Even from school, we'd all go down. We'd go to a shelter just a little way down the street from school. And we went sort of down the steps and into this shelter, and we just sat there until we were allowed out again. It was just everyday happenings that it didn't seem unusual because we were just so brought up with it. I guess if it was happened when we were 10 or 12 or something, those people might have felt it differently. But because I was only sort of five when I was at school and going through that, it, you know, it had always been there.
And how often would this disrupt your day? Like,
I guess not an awful lot, actually, in the day. It was more at night.
It was nighttime, yeah.
But then later on, they started having the doodlebugs come over. And my father had gone to hospital, so it was just my mum and myself at the house. So it must have been very scary for her. Now that you look back, you can sort of see how awful it must have been. But we could stand and watch the doodlebugs go over. Then they started having these ones where they'd stop the engine, but they'd carry on. They weren't going to crash exactly where the engine stopped. So you never knew whether you were going to be hit or not.
And is those images still very vivid in your mind?
Yeah. And when a German airman came down on his parachute, we watched him coming down.
That's quite amazing.
My parents had told me, now, if you think there's a plane coming over and might be a German plane, lie flat on the ground. I'd gone down and got looked at chickens, found some eggs. Very happily, got eggs. Plane. Went straight down, broke the eggs. Broke my heart too, because I'd broke the eggs. I thought it was the end of the world. But, you know, we were told to do those things, so that's what I did. But I broke the eggs and I was very upset. We were able to play in the street because there were no cars. It's very rare for anybody to have a car. It was because of obviously something that was really needed. I mean, even the milkman had an electric type cart that he'd pull along, and the baker would come with his big wicker basket with all the breads, and you could choose what you wanted at the day when they came to the door. Should try that now. It'd be fun. Summertime, I used to love laying in the grass and watch the Spitfires go over. Spitfire's my favourite plane. I would love to go in a flight. I think, yes, that would be my dream. Well, we used to have to catch a bus and go to Morden Railway Station or Underground Station and catch the Underground through to go to my grandparents. And where we would change trains, there were people sleeping on the platforms, so you could see the mums knitting away and trying to get the kids to go to sleep. But, you know, a whole railway station, if you can imagine a platform with all these people sleeping, and sometimes with the bunks and everything. So.
And is that because of the bombings?
Of the bombing, yes. At night they couldn't stay in their houses and they'd go and sleep down there.
I suppose, yeah, it's so much safer, isn't it? I mean, did you ever feel safe?
I don't know that I felt not safe, actually. I can't remember ever feeling quite as scared as I would feel now, or even you know, a few years later. But because I think of the age, and we just had our friends and we'd play, and it would, you know, you come in, you've got to go in the shelter. Okay, that's all right. I can remember at night we'd read Christopher Robin saying his prayers. All this, that lovely book or books.
Did you stay in London for that whole time?
Just south of London. We moved again from that time, I said before. We moved to a place called Worcester Park, which is south of Croydon. So you get planes from Croydon probably going over, I think. Not all that far from Biggin Hill was that way, we were here, London was up here, and Farnborough a bit further south.
How did you feel when you heard the news that the war was over?
Oh, we were all very excited. Then we had a big street party, and I was given Baba the Elephant book. We all had books given us, you know, that, and it was so exciting. And at the end of the war, actually, my parents took me up to London on the Underground, and we went to Buckingham Palace and watched all the things happening, and it was all very exciting. There was a woman on the Underground who, I don't know whether she'd had too much to drink. Looking back, maybe that was it. Otherwise, we just thought she was a little bit off a rocker. But she decided she was related to somebody royal, and she was eating a bag of prawns. And that's all I can remember, because it was a bit smelly and there were so many people on the Underground. Oh. But yeah, she was ranting on about how she was related and funny stories that she had.
What about schooling? Your early schooling?
It was good fun. We used to have a nice time. I don't know, it just seemed like normal school. We'd go in and we'd have our playtime and everything else. Like I say, I don't think there were that many calls for us to go underground to shelters and things during the day as much as at night, but there were the odd times when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, we just learnt, and a lot of the kids would not have fathers at home because they'd be away at war. I don't think I knew of more than one person actually lost a father. So, not knowing them much after the age of 12, though, when, you know, 11, 12, when we went to high school, sort of parted our ways, I don't know. But no, during our actual primary school, it was fine.
And what would you do? What sort of games did you play?
We used to play cricket in the street. At school, we did maypole dancing. We just played chase and silly, you know, just the usual sort of things like that, and hopscotch.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of two ball on the wall, or three ball, or however many you could manage. Just general things like that.
What was two ball on the wall?
You just play one and then the other, you know, so you catch them one up, like a juggler.
Okay. I've never heard of it.
Haven't you?
No.
No, we always used to do that. And then you could see if you could do it two, one hand.
Whereabouts did you go to high school, or secondary school?
Not far away. I went to a school that was called Nonsuch High School for Girls. And there was actually a ship called the Nonsuch. But we would get letters to the school called No Such School.
And was it a large school?
I think there were three classes of each grade, with approximately 30 students per grade.
Okay, yeah, that's big enough. Yeah. And were they good times, good memories?
Yes, I enjoyed. Yeah, I liked school. I wasn't one of those that hated it or anything. I quite enjoyed it. Mm.
And at this point in time, while you're in secondary school, did you have ambitions of what you wanted to do after schooling?
Not really. I know a lot of people suggested that I do nursing, but I wasn't too struck on that idea. But no. Not really. And then finally, when I did leave, I did travel. I worked in travel.
Okay, yeah.
No, I did travel, but I worked for a travel agent. And then I worked for the Bank of Adelaide in London, in their travel department, which brought me out here.
So was that as a consultant? As
yes, or yes.
It was, yeah.
Yes. Mm. But when I first left high school, I went and worked in Switzerland, in a family for 3 months, and that was really good. Just helping the family, anything and everything,
mm-hmm.
but trying to improve my French, because it was a French part of Switzerland.
Mm. Travel being a big part of your life, whereabouts?
Mainly Europe.
Some other destinations? What were your favourites?
Switzerland.
Switzerland, yeah, okay.
I like Greek islands, and I like everywhere, really, because there's something different in everything that you see. You like places that are really old, a lot of character to them, the cobblestones and all the things that were different. Well, that's what I like.
And you came to Australia through your role with the Bank of Adelaide as a travel consultant.
Yes.
Yeah. When did that all come about, and how did you feel, and
Well, they also got me dealing. One of the guys went on leave and they said to me, oh, you can help with the migration side of things. So lots of people would write in and what are the houses like and all this sort of thing. So I sold it to myself by dealing with other people's writing in. I'm answering them. And thought, I think I'll go and try myself. So I tried. And here I still am, 1965.
And did you come straight to Adelaide? Or did you live in a few different spots?
But I'd made friends with people that I'd helped with their travel arrangements in Europe and travel back here. And so I stayed with a friend for a while in Sydney, then in Melbourne, and then I came here. And I had a friend here as well, who now lives down at Victor Harbour, which is not very convenient. It's too far away.
So what were your first impressions of Adelaide?
What have I done? It was so backward.
Really?
Back in 1965. I was so used to London with so much going on and so big.
Yeah.
But give me this little town and don't make it any bigger, please.
So you just missed the Beatles coming to Adelaide.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's such a contrast.
I did see the Beatles in London, though.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I can say I saw them. I didn't say that I heard them because the audience was so loud. I sat there like this while all these people around me were screaming.
Where was that?
Hammersmith Palais. And I saw the Beatles. I saw Frank Sinatra there as well. No, not the Palais, the Gaumont at Hammersmith. And the contrast was absolutely amazing because there was sort of chatter in the audience. Then the curtain started to open. Absolute hush. You could have heard a pin drop. And Sinatra came on. Two great experiences.
Very memorable.
Yes. Yeah, the contrast. Yeah, who wants to see the Beatles? No.
So what year did you see the Beatles?
Might have been 64. Hmm. I really don't remember exactly what year. Probably not long before I came out. Might have been early 65. I really don't know.
What other music did you listen to back then? Or was popular?
That type of thing. So I used to like dancing. So whatever they were playing for dancing was great.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. We used to do proper ballroom dancing.
Did you?
Yes. People don't do that anymore, do they?
How long did it take you to settle?
Well, I met Russ and we got married February 67. And then he was sent up to Queensland. So I followed and I went up to Queensland.
Whereabouts in Queensland did you go to?
Ipswich, because he was at Amberley. And then he was sent overseas and I came back to Adelaide, by which time my parents had come over and I stayed with them.
So your parents migrated over as well?
After me.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
After I sold it to them.
That must have been a pretty wonderful feeling having them come over.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, that was nice, yes. Because back then you couldn't just make phone calls or FaceTime or anything like that. If you tried to make a phone call, there were all these terrible noises and you couldn't hear each other on the other end and it was very expensive. So it was like, you know, a letter a week rather than anything else.
And what were your parents' first impressions of Adelaide?
Not much, I don't think. I don't know. My mum never really got over coming out. I think she really was quite homesick.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went back to London with her, she was a bit horrified with all of that too. So I think, you know, it was like things have changed so much that...
Really? At what sort of time period was it between coming to Australia and your parents getting back to London or getting back to England?
Well, we went back. I took my mum back after my father had died, and it was at a time when there was a lot of coal strikes, and everywhere was very dimly lit. All the shops were very dim. It just didn't look vibrant at all.
Mm.
It wasn't the London that we remembered. So, but I'm just glad I'm here. I mean, I loved it when I came, and I lived with one of the friends that I'd met in London, and I live with her and her mother down at Grange. We just walked down to the beach and. Oh, it's a wonderful life. Yes, I thought it was great. There's one more thing about war that I could tell you that was quite interesting because we'd never go on holidays. And then one time another family friend said, But we've got friends that live in the country, down in the west coast, towards the west of England, and they've not had any bombing over that far. So, great. So we all went down to this farm and stayed there. And the first night that we were there, we were surrounded with incendiary bombs. So the whole place was lit up with incendiary bombs. So and then there was a, we had to go in one of their sheds, not because they didn't have any shelters, just a shed, and there were all these carcasses hanging. So I can still remember that quite well. Animals hanging that had been killed, ready for a nice meal.
Mm.
And then we used to play in the daytime. We'd be playing outside. It was great fun. Afterwards, just this one night, the first night, having said, no, we've not had anything like that down here. We're all clear. And they did. Mm. Took it with us.
That's the timing of it, hey?
Mm. But lots of times walking through London or anywhere with places that were bombed, you know, the pictures that you see on there all crashed down. And I can remember the girls a while back taking me to the Festival Theatre. They had an exhibition there of what it would be like if a bomb dropped or a hydrogen bomb dropped. And I said, well, yeah, it looks much like, I can remember London, it's the back garden, a clothesline that was dipped like this, you know, the dog's drinking bowl and all that, but no life. And that's exactly like it was.
Mm-hmm.
But not necessarily because one of these other bombs had dropped. It was just, that was how it was back then. One thing I remember, that a lot of the cutlery was taken, you know, if you wanted to give it. But if you went to a restaurant or something, they didn't have nice cutlery. And if you bought a cup of tea, the spoons were sort of almost a blackish colour, silver. They were absolutely horrible. And so I wouldn't stir my tea. But my mum could do it for me, but as long as I didn't see the spoon, I was all right, I'd drink it. But that was one of the, like, ooh, they're horrible, almost like you could bend them. I don't know what they were made of, but they didn't have nice things like that in the war. And a lot of the people had telephone books torn up with a hole in them and a string hanging from in the toilets. We did, fortunately, we weren't, but some of the places were like that. One friend of mine was bombed out and she said that they had to move down and they lived partly in the church and partly somewhere else. It was like, you know, they were just homeless for a while.
Mm.
I can't imagine what that would have been like. It was bad enough being, you know, with half the house not livable for a little while. But, yeah.
So you were 9 years old?
When
the war finished.
Mm.
Do you have many, many photographs of that period?
Only that one.
You have a photograph here waving
a Union Jack.
Union Jack flag. And what can you tell me about that photograph?
Oh, I can still remember standing there for the photograph. We were all so happy. Had my hair curled and pretty bows in and everything and stood underneath the apple tree. That was great fun.
Where was this?
And my back garden.
And what was the significance of this photograph?
This is Worcester Park. Where we were living, and we were going to have a street party, and we'd heard of, you know, so we got the flag out and happily waving the flag. My mum was very good all through the war, actually. We had a big map of Europe on the wall, and she had little flags with German and British flags on pins, and if she heard that the Germans were advancing somewhere, she would have them marked on there. So it was interesting, so it kept me aware of Europe, really, of where places were, which was good. That was very interesting. And when I look back now, I think, gosh, I should have taken more notice of that at the time, but I was too young to sort of be that involved. But yes, it was good to sort of know and to see how aware she was of what was happening.
Mm.
There's some of the fun we used to have with neighbours, on three of us, and these were my next door neighbours, and we used to have, I had a bike, a three-wheeler bike, and so we'd ride around on that and do things. This album the girls did for me for my 70th birthday and blew up all the photographs that they could find.
Wonderful. Could you just talk me through some of those photographs and there's any stories that you can associate with the photographs?
That was my dad holding me up very little, and I used to point a little toy cat and show it the Tishas, not fish, Tisha. And I had a koala bear sent from Australia, and I was quite scared of it. It was all right there, it looks, but it was a bit big for me. It was about the same size, I think. It sat me on the ground as well. It would have been the same size as me.
Yeah.
Dressing up as a nurse and having the doll's pram with the friends and ballerina, girl guide. Very proud of my school uniform. Serve God and be cheerful with the Tudor Rose. My first cruise, pointing to the map. I don't know what the ghost is. This was on the cruise. I was also into theatre. I was the cat. I passed my driving test.
What age were you there in that photograph?
18. Yeah, we weren't allowed to drive until you were 18 in England at that stage.
And how did you find it? The process happened pretty quickly.
My dad taught me. With my 21st, I worked for British European Airways, which became amalgamated with BOAC and became BAC.
Mm-hmm.
I was working for them when they were BEA.
And what was your position?
Ground hostess. And then I worked with a little bit of flying involved with one of the smaller airlines that did package tours. But I think ground hostess was much more interesting. Then go to the place, yes, but when you were flying it, nah, didn't like that much at all. I don't know what people see in it. My friend Heidi in Switzerland, where Heidi gets her name, and Lawrence that I still speak to in Switzerland.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we still. Yes, he's a really good friend.
Wow, that's special, isn't it?
Wedding photo. I did some heraldry. I really was interested. I've always been interested in heraldry and going in the old churches in London with the pennants and the things all out. I think that's great. And so I did some. So we were looking in all the books and finding out what badges people could have painted. Because Russ's father was American. And a lot of my ancestors went to America, and so we've got branches of us there as well. But,
You moved to Queensland, but then he was posted. Was he posted somewhere?
He was then posted overseas, yes.
Okay, would you like to talk a bit about that?
Well, we were up in Queensland. He got posted overseas, so I came back to Adelaide. And I stayed here, and at that time I was pregnant with Heidi. To start off with, while I was still in Queensland and I was really sick, and the doctors told the Air Force not to send him away for a year. And he went over for 6 months instead. So he was back by the time she was born. Only just by about 2 days.
Really?
Yes. Oh,
that's cutting it fine.
Yes.
Heidi was born.
December 67.
And Heidi was your first of three daughters.
Yep.
How was that period for you? Was it fairly, was there a lot of pressure?
It was horrible.
On you at that time?
Yeah, I was really ill. I went and had another two afterwards. I must have been crazy. But they weren't as difficult as the first one, so that was all right. And during that time, they sent me that. Take it out and read the back. Read the spelling of it. What does that tell you?
V-A-L-O-R.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound American?
Yeah.
It's American Airmen's. And I'm still trying to find out the details. And so Russ tried to find things written in when we were in Canberra one time. I have written to various places who have put me onto somebody else, to somebody else. And when you look at the list of people who have received that medal, and then he was very upset because he wanted to wear it to one of the Anzac marches, and he got told he couldn't wear it. So he would wear his ribbon on the other side or something. But at one stage, they looked at it because he was so disgusted with the treatment that he'd had, he threw the whole lot in the rubbish bin. But I got it back out again. But that's why he just didn't look at them. Nobody cares. That's the way they were all treated when they got back.
And this was commonplace. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know what or why or how. He wouldn't ever talk about anything. But if you read the paper here, you'll see how it says about him having nightmares and whatever, and I would, if I tried to wake him, he'd grab me. Okay, I think if I'm going to wake you, it might be some water from a distance or something, you know. Yeah. I used to have a lot of nightmares.
Did that continue for a long time?
Well, they just said he's got PTSD, you know.
That's important. You still have that, isn't
and
it?
And then eventually, after that book was written about Ubon, the King of Thailand decided that they should have a medal as well. When is it? This the one? Well, it's the 40th anniversary or something. Air Force, Airfield Defence Guard, ADG.
So can you talk a little bit about where Russell was stationed?
I don't know very much about it at all, but it was in Thailand. And I just know that they used to go out on sorties, and they had a little tiny, I think it's a spider monkey, a very tiny monkey that they used to have. The tail end guy would have the spider monkey on his shoulder. And if that made a noise, or didn't make a noise, one way or another. I think if the monkey went suddenly silent, it meant, careful, there's something around. It was a way of telling if there was wrong things. I know they used to go out, and you wouldn't know if there was the next person was actually against you or for you, which made it rather hard.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody could have a bike, but in the bike, in the tubing of the bike would be gunpowder or whatever to blast it up if they wanted to. I think a lot of them got on well with the community that they were near. They'd, you know, be quite friendly with people.
Since it was 1967, and you've got here 79.
He was in 79 Squadron.
Squadron, okay.
They had a plane up at Edinburgh, and they refitted it, made it airworthy again when we went up there, but it was a long time ago. I don't know if it's still there. Can't remember what type of plane it was now. I just have this one mind on Spitfires and nothing else.
So you'd mentioned to me earlier, which is not actually recorded, you mentioned that Russell, part of his role was guarding a US base?
As far as I understand, there was an American base over in Ubon, and they were partly guarding it. I don't know if they had their own separate area or if it was sort of within the same compound. I don't know.
6 months, Russell was there for 6 months. Mm. Came back 2 days before Heidi was born. Mm. Was Russell posted away ever again after that?
Not overseas, no. He was posted to New South Wales. So we went over there when Heidi was 4 months old. We went to New South Wales.
And how did you find that after being in Adelaide for, you know, for a period?
It was quite an experience. It was different. We were up in the Blue Mountains. It was lovely.
Bit colder there than compared to Adelaide.
He was at Richmond at the time. Yeah, well, it was called Kurrajong, but if you go to Kurrajong now, there's a huge estate there, which didn't exist at the time. We lived on a hillside, and down the hill, up the other side, was all orange groves and kookaburras and this knows what. There was just two shops at the bottom of the hill, and that's it. We'd have to go to Penrith or somewhere to shop.
So how long did you stay there for?
I don't know, 6 months, a year? I can't remember exactly anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Then he came back to Edinburgh, and he was there for a little while before being discharged.
And how did you feel when he was discharged?
Phew. Because then, at that stage, you couldn't say, I'd like to go to somewhere and stay. They would just chuff you up somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
you know. But now I think they're more friendly about it because so many people leaving after training, and then they'd leave because they didn't want to go to all these different places for a few months, you know. If you got a proper posting, then you could take all your belongings and everything and go there,
mm.
whereas just a short-term thing was crazy.
Yeah, yeah, it's not practical.
Mm.
So that was a big relief for you then?
Yes.
He's out of the service? Yeah. What happened next? What Was there more children along the way? Or?
Yes, two more after that. We've got three girls altogether. Mm. Tamara and Donna.
Okay, so it was Heidi.
Heidi, Tamara and Donna.
And Donna. What was it like having three daughters growing up in the house? Mm. And no boys, were they a handful?
Oh, right. I don't know how I'd have been with a boy. I guess I would have been all right. Would have been nice if Russ wanted a boy. Or we would have liked a boy, I guess. But we got what we got, didn't we? Don't have a choice, really.
So that's here in Adelaide. Where were you living at that point?
Discharged. When he was first discharged, we were up at Elizabeth. Then we bought a house in Salisbury. It's Salisbury something or other. But Salisbury West Football Club was right opposite our house. Mm-hmm. When the netball courts were right opposite, so the girls could go there. And then eventually they opened up a school at the far end of all of that, and so they could just walk straight across to school. It was very easy.
So did you stay there while the girls finished their schooling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, not quite. We moved up here just before Donna finished her schooling. But Heidi was married by that time. And then not long after that, Tamara went off to America for a year. So there was just Donna for a while. Mm.
So that in itself, that must have been fairly quiet then. Suddenly having...
Suddenly.
You know, just, after, just one...
Yes, after sort time. Of getting everything organised for, you know, just our family plus the other halves of, you know, their boyfriends or girlfriends or something. So it was always a huge meal. At meal times, it seemed. But, yeah, suddenly it was quiet. Now it's even quieter.
Mm. What about yourself then, Brenda, during this period? What were you getting up to? What kept you busy during these times?
I finished up getting a job at school. So I worked, first of all, when I was still at Salisbury, I worked down at Parafield Gardens High School, just part-time doing the lab assistant. And then suddenly they were urgently needing someone in... library, so I had to go and learn how to use the special film machines that they had, the Iki projectors,
mm-hmm.
and got qualified to use that. And so then I then somebody wanted help at the high school up here, the Heights. I came up here and was working in the lab and then the library there, and then I worked down at Windsor Gardens for a while because it was all part-time. I'd be up there for the morning and I'd be down there for the afternoons, and,
wow.
and then finished up being permanently at the Heights School until I retired. So I was there, I'm really not quite sure, but 13 or 15 years that I was actually up there. So it made me 65, yeah, because we went on long, I had long service leave, and I thought, why am I going back? I didn't approve of the headmistress that they'd got. I thought, why should I go back? Don't really need to. So I went back and said, no, I'm going to resign.
So that freed you up to do some travelling, or what?
Well, we did do some. We went over to America, saw his relations, and caught up with people like that. Then we went over to England and caught up with some of mine. We went to Switzerland and caught up with our friends there. Yeah, that was fun. It was good because we've stayed with our friends in Switzerland a few times. And so when Heidi and I went, we had a chalet,
mm-hmm.
and it had the two bedrooms. So we shared a bedroom and we invited them to come and stay with us. And they had never been to that part of Switzerland before. So we were able to introduce them to a different area of Switzerland. So it was nice that we could look after them for a change. Although I do remember when Lawrence came out, he was 21, I think, and he and Russ went off to the Flinders Ranges and he taught him all about the outback and he loved it.
What keeps you busy?
Painting.
Painting is a passion?
Yeah, well, I need the motivation sometimes, but yeah, like Switzerland.
That's one of yours?
They all are.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. Wow.
Mm. At the moment, it's dogs.
That's fabulous.
So if you know anyone wants a dog portrait, me know.
I've been too consumed with and now I'm looking around. Mm. They're fantastic.
Well, if you want some dogs, they're out on the wall out there. Yes. No, not big one in the middle. That's not, unfortunately. But it just reminded me of a place in Italy that we'd went to a couple of years back, a place called Stresa.
So how long does it take you to produce and create a painting?
Usually
like that?
quite a long time, usually.
And is that from a photograph?
Yeah.
Or memory?
Nothing from here, I'm afraid. No, I like photographs.
Apart from your painting, what else keeps you busy?
Exercise class, table tennis, coffees with friends when possible, crossword puzzles. Lots of crossword puzzles.
Is there anything on your bucket list?
Not really, because I was beginning to feel, no, I don't fancy to travel that far again with the planes. They're too crowded. I can't cope with it all. No, other than going over to Victoria, or if anyone can drive me anywhere, I'll go anywhere if you can drive. But I don't fancy to go in public transport. Don't want to fly anywhere.
No.
I'm not going to sit with a mask on for that long.
Yeah, it's a long time, isn't it? Do you still drive?
Yes, locally.
Locally, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah.
I wouldn't drive into the city or anything like that, but I drive locally. So. And I try and avoid what I call mum traffic.
Which is the school runs?
Well, yes. When they're taking the kids to school or picking them up, it's like chaos on the road. So I avoid that.
Mm. That's wise, I think. Mm. You've lived here in Modbury for 33, 34 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Any plans of moving anywhere else?
No. No, definitely not.
No, it's lovely. It's quiet. You can hear the birds and the trees.
Mm, no, I like it right here. Like you said, I've got space that side. I've got space that side. And a little bit of space at the back as well. And it's quiet. Easy to get to places really from here. Mind you, if I couldn't get the bus from here, I wouldn't walk up that hill. I wouldn't get far enough.
Is it a fair walk from here?
It doesn't seem like it when you drive up in the car, but when you walk it, yes.
Mm.
Going round the block, it's like I'm trying to work it now that I've got back to my exercise class. So all these things were stopped for such a long while, and you don't do the same amount of exercise when you're home. It's not like I sit down all day, but it's still not the same as actually getting out there with the group and getting motivated and do the exercises. So hopefully it's going to strengthen me, because I'd had a hip operation and I needed to get strong again, because that stopped me from doing a lot of the things.
Okay.
But I'm back to doing most of them now. Excellent. Except playing badminton, which is what I was doing up until about 2 years ago.
So did you have a fall or...?
No, just wear out.
Right.
Old age.
So how do you feel now? Are you okay?
I'm fighting fit.
Yeah? Mm. Yeah, you look terrific.
Yeah,
and you, like, you've got plenty of energy.
Oh, yeah, I have. That's the trouble. I've got too much energy. What can I do? Let me out of here. I feel in prison sometimes. What can I do? Where can I go?
So would that be a couple of times a week? You'd get out and join the group? Yeah.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Wednesdays and Fridays.
Brenda, I'd like to finish up and ask you if you could give any advice for the youth of today or for future generations about life, what would it be?
I would like to start off with the schools and the parents turning off some of the television. I think that the language and the way the things that they show these days are horrible, and the kids just think, well, they do it, we'll do it, and they're becoming really slap happy with the way they dress, the way they act, and the language they use. A bit more respect would be the word, I think, because they don't seem to have any anymore. I mean, I know I first noticed when I was working at the schools that the kids would come up with, Deanne wants this. I think, well, who's Deanne? It's Miss Somebody, you know. And they're only little preschoolers practically, or first grade, and they're calling them by their Christian names. And to me, that was so wrong. that they didn't have that respect, whereas we always brought up like that. I don't think you can go too far on it. We didn't even know their Christian names, but you know, at least a little bit more respect should be shown. Okay, that's me on my soapbox.
Brenda Abbey, thank you so much for allowing me into your home and for sharing some stories with me today. It's been an absolute privilege to meet you, and thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for coming. I hope that I was able to sound sensible enough to give you a good idea of what went on during Second World War, at least.
If you or someone you know would like to be captured in a podcast, contact Christian Teusner via this email address, theemutree@gmail.com. theemutree@gmail.com. My name is Christian Teusner. Thank you for listening.